Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of May the 31st, 2016. We're doing it for May 31st, this point on the Tuesday, because as most of you may have been aware, Monday was, of course, the Memorial Day. So this is current federal tax developments brought to you by Nicholas Patrick CPA Incorporated and your state society of CPAs. I'm Ed Zollers, and I'm going to be talking to you about a few things that are happening this week, all of which are kind of interesting in the area of taxes. It's been a light week, but there's been a few things coming up. First, we're going to talk about the issue that phone scammers have now decided that we need to invent a tax if we're going to try to scam people out of money. So we got a newly invented scam. We had the IRS formalizing some guidance that we talked about was going to be coming a couple of weeks ago. So we'll go over the formal guidance that was issued. We also have the fact the IRS decided that sometimes things do get less expensive. We'll talk about a change in user fees for certain organizations filing for 501c3 status. And finally, we'll talk about a case where a Mary Kay salesperson discovered that her situation was not like that of an insurance agent. So we'll be talking about all of that here this week, getting ready for our week here in the sun. And in fact, I'm here in Phoenix, for those of you who are not aware. And being in Phoenix, we are definitely getting ready for our week in the sun, with our week in the sun giving us all kinds of stuff. This is the time of year where all kinds of neat things happen. It feels like you're roasting. And so we're hopefully, for those of you here in Phoenix, I just want to let you know that I'm going to have a few courses coming up in Arizona, both in Phoenix and Tucson. Those of you in Flagstaff, it's not that hot, so you guys can, you know, stay where you are. But nevertheless, so coming up here, I've got a few courses coming up I thought I'd discuss. I'm going to have a couple of courses in Phoenix on June the 13th, investment taxation, the Medicare tax, and beyond. We're going to discuss the issues there, mainly involving the net investment income tax. I'll have a two-pair of 4-hour courses on the 14th, one the regular Arizona mandatory four-hour ethics course for your every two-year renewal. And then in the afternoon, we'll go over an update in Arizona taxes, including discussing what the Arizona legislature put together this session. Finally, on the 15th, I will go ahead and after I finish on the 14th, I will drive down Interstate 10. And on the 15th in Tucson at the Viscount Suites, we'll go through pass-through entities, advanced issues. That course will specifically cover the interesting problem we have with the new partnership audit rules. So all kinds of neat things there. Coming up in July, then I go on to the state of Washington and be in Bellevue for a pair of courses. First, this particular sort of thing, current federal tax developments, except brought to you in an 8-hour version live on July the 7th. And on the 8th, we'll do a state and gift taxation planning and compliance. So remember, and for those of you in other states, we have plenty of other courses going on with other members of Nicholas Patrick and other members of the group that lectures for the 4-hour live sessions for all your state societies. So be sure to check your state societies. Ladies and gentlemen, tax season ended. It's now time to go out and find your CPE. With that, let's go ahead and take a look at our first case for this week. Actually, not a case. We have very few cases this week because, honestly, as I said, very little actually happened. What we did discover was the IRS issued a news release late in the week, news release IR 2016-81, and they told us about a new scam that apparently has gotten large enough for the IRS now to feel like they have to warn people about it. Scammers appear at this point to be a little bit frustrated by what's happened. That is, all these people calling up and telling people that the IRS is after them and need to pay money right away, and if they don't, they're going to be thrown in jail. Well, apparently, that's been picked up now by so many news services and so many places, and it's gotten so much coverage that, believe it or not, that scam isn't working as well as it used to. So we have to change the scam up a bit. The most recent scam, which I find to be interesting and somewhat amusing in one sense because the scammers are kind of combining a couple of federal situations, a couple of things FERC's involved in, which will probably add to some confusion, and going after, at this point, not what previously had been these scams that appear to be most effective targeted at the elderly. Now we're going to go the other end of the scale and try to go after those who are younger. This time we're going to call and claim the taxpayer has an unpaid federal student tax. Now, that's kind of interesting because, as you're probably aware, there is no such thing as a federal student tax. But that doesn't really stop the scammers. And in fact, because nobody's warned anybody about people calling for federal student tax, the scammers probably believe that, A, people may fall for this, and more likely, B, it'd be aimed at to be most effective at people who are students. Students haven't generally had to deal with the tax system as much as anybody else has. They're not going to be as aware of how the IRS normally operates. Finally, remember, we have government loans and student loans that also get dunning calls for the government. So this kind of combines that. When they start the phone call, the student probably is not sure if this is something related to student loans, if this is something related to taxes, whatever it is, but they are told they need to go down, buy a prepaid debit card. Oh, by the way, that's probably the keyest, the most important thing to tell anybody about is, yeah, going down and buying a prepaid debit card or using Western Union to wire money to somebody, that's not how the IRS works, and so it's important to understand. And if they resist or claim they're not going to do it, then the standard threat comes back that we're going to call the cops. The cops will be on your doorstep and they'll arrest you. And of course, mom and dad will be terribly upset with you if you're arrested because you have the student loans that you hadn't paid for. So mom and dad get really upset. So the student decides that maybe the best thing to do is to go ahead and pay along. Obviously, this is a scam. What it does tell us, though, which I think is very important, is expect additional modifications to be made to the approaches that scammers are taking. So we should see other approaches going with IRS. By the way, we also had cases where they're going to call being a tax preparer. We have cases where they're going to call pretending to be almost anything to verify tax information. We're going to see scams change largely because they need to change. I was made aware by one person of a call that they received where the calling entity claimed to be the Treasury Inspector General's office, who apparently now is in the collection realm, which probably surprised TIGTA. But basically, we're seeing scams go that are going to vary because they realize people have been made too aware now of the IRS's calling scam. In fact, you can just mention that in a room now, and even without CPAs in the room, you get a lot of chuckles about, yeah, we've gotten 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 calls on that. One thing to consider that's part of this notice in this news release, which I think is still important, is to remind your clients, because it's going to change and because it's not going to be exactly like what they heard on television, the IRS has some very interesting material following the basic description of this scam, which is repetitive of things that they have told people before, but you may want to consider adding this, especially to next year's engagement letter or the information you send out for the engagement letters or even in your newsletters that you're doing over the summer to remind people what will happen. This tells them about various scams that have been reported. That includes demanding the immediate tax payment, which I already know about. The send the W-2 in. Remember, we talked about that problem that Seagate fell for. We'll talk about calls to verify your tax information. Or, this is a big one for you guys to be aware of, calls claiming to come from a tax preparer that needs information related to the return. That's a key issue that you need to be aware of and watch out for. That's one where someone could leverage having gotten into your system or having gotten access to the address book of anybody who works for your firm. If I can figure out who your firm's clients are, the scammer could, then they could start calling them and claim to be from you. That's all a problem. Also has a nice list of things the IRS will never do. And essentially also tells them if they have any questions, who they can call, gives the number for TIGTA. This time you can call TIGTA and lets them know to report the problems. Also tells you, which is the advice I always give anybody, hang up, call the IRS office locally and or go down to the IRS office locally. And if you really owe money to them, they'll be able to figure that out and tell you what you owe them. But don't fall for this phone call routine. We need to warn our clients because, unfortunately, the scammers are just going to get more aggressive and more effective. They're not going to get less aggressive and less effective. This is becoming a major problem. And, unfortunately, we're going to have to try to teach people how to do it because I do strongly suspect that the next move in this is going to be to emulate tax preparers as a way to get people involved. And if these individuals can figure out who the preparer is, they'll call claim to be from you. So as the IRS has done, it'll probably be very important to communicate to your clients the things you will never ask the clients to do, like send all their W-2s by email to a certain address. You know, things you're just not going to do. Well, getting back to phones again, we have another issue that this week we got the formal information. IRS issued a memorandum on a policy change issued on May the 20th. This memorandum is doing something we discussed back at the beginning of May. You may remember early in May, I talked about a situation that we had where at the Taxpayer Advocates Forum in Iowa, there were many preparers there that said their clients were being confused because when exams were being started that were field exams, before the client got any mail or any letters or any other information, they were getting calls out of the blue from IRS agents. And that, you know, clients are confused by that because they think, you know, they've heard of all these scams. We've told people the IRS won't call out of the blue, and guys, you're calling out of the blue. And that's confusing people, making it much tougher for us to inform people about how to understand what's a scam, what's a real call. As was pointed out, and as we discussed back in early May, the Internal Revenue Manual actually still asks agents to essentially make contact that way initially, although most parts of the country, it appeared agents had given up on that, probably because they understood the problem. In this case, we have a formal memorandum that was issued. This formal memorandum that was issued on May the 20th. It's issued from John Dalrymple, who is Deputy Commissioner for Services and Enforcement. It went out to all four divisions of the IRS, basically those in charge of all four divisions. It states effective immediately. That means effective as of May 20th. Agents are not to initiate contact with clients for audits by phone. Rather, the agent is to mail the request for this to the last known address of the taxpayer and wait 14 days before attempting a phone contact if they don't get any response from the taxpayer, or if somebody's on power of attorney, they'll send it that as well. This tells us how they're going to handle this. So the agents are supposed to now begin waiting 14 days. The good news about this is you can actually use this memo and you can send it on to your clients to point out, if you get a call from the IRS out of the blue claiming, if you get a call from somebody out of the blue claiming to be from the IRS, claiming to start an exam, claiming to need information, realize we have a letter here that says the IRS is going to send you a letter, and there's going to be at least a 14-day wait after the letter before they'll try to contact you otherwise. So this is useful. Now, as we said, this got a lot of complaints when it came down, when it went to the Iowa case. The Iowa forum was a very active discussion, shall we say, that went into this area about how confusing this was. The good news is, hopefully now, with it going from the very top of the IRS down to all four divisions, hopefully we will no longer have this little problem of the IRS effectively confusing people by making phone calls out of the blue, the very thing we have told our clients the IRS won't do. Well, it's useful to have a little bit of good news, so now we have some good news here. Revenue Procedure 2016-32, issued on May the 27th. This deals with those who are filing Form 1023-EZ. Form 1023-EZ is filed by some tax-exempt organizations looking to get the 501c3 status who meet certain requirements. Now, not all taxpayers who are going to be exempt orgs qualify for this. In fact, two big things you have to do first. You have to have gross fees, gross receipts that are not in excess of $50,000, and you have to have total assets not in excess of $250,000. And then you have to go down and look at completing a multiple-page worksheet on the back of the instructions for Form 1023-EZ. If you find out that you meet all those requirements, then you can apply. This application is only filed online, filed at pay.gov. Now, the good news we have is that the fee is going to drop. The bad news we have is that the drop's not going to take place till July 1st. So if you're filing tomorrow for this status, you've got a problem because tomorrow the rate fee is still going to be $400. But effective July 1st, it will drop to $275. That probably means if the organization can wait, if you're forming an organization and you want to save a few bucks, the organization might wait until July 1st to start the application on Form 1023-EZ. I'm a little confused why the IRS felt they had to push this into the future for this date, but nevertheless, they feel they do. I guess the theory was that if they just said it was effective now, the people that paid $400 last week would have been upset. So we're going to tell everybody like a month ahead of time so they know they can delay if they want to. For all it's worth, I still think the people that filed last week will still not be happy about paying $400 when it could have been $275. The IRS justifies this change by noting that they take a look at the cost of actually processing items and setting user fees, and it's been determined that this online application, which frankly the service doesn't do much with except process it, and you know, you check all the boxes and they say, oh, fine, you're good, doesn't cost the service as much as they thought it would. So for that reason, they are backing down from the amount that was announced back originally in the beginning of 2016. Remember, these notices come out. We issue the user fees generally at the beginning of each year. Now we're going to modify the revenue ruling on which that was issued, which is revenue procedure, which is revenue procedure 2016-8. And with revenue procedure 2016-32, the number is now going down. As I say, that represents good news for our tax-exempt organizations or attempting to be tax-exempt organizations. But basically, just be aware of that change. And certainly, you might want to counsel if we can start a little bit later, maybe you'd like to save that money. Now, next up, we actually have what's one of our only real court case of the week. This was a quiet week because, honestly, everybody was getting ready for the Memorial Day weekend. So we really didn't have much in the way of cases, but one we did have was a case of Peterson versus Commissioner came out of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. We're affirming a tax court memorandum 2013-271. The case came down May 24th, 2016. Now, this deals with self-employment tax and a non-qualified deferred compensation arrangement with an independent contractor. The taxpayer in this situation had been selling Mary Kay Cosmetics for Mary Kay, acting as an independent contractor, for many years. Under the Mary Kay regime, you both get money for what you sell, and you get money for those you recruit downstream from you who sell. So we get money based on that. This particular case involved a taxpayer who had ceased to be a Mary Kay representative. She had retired, and after her retirement, she began getting payments from Mary Kay under a program. This particular program was kind of interesting because this was a program that had existed for many years. And in this program, Mary Kay had the right to at any time modify or even cease the program. The problem, of course, was when we got to 2000, we got back to 2004, and we suddenly had the 409 Cap A rules for non-qualified deferred comp. They got a little nervous about their program and whether it could meet all the 409 Cap A qualifications or if it was, in fact, covered by 409 Cap A. So since Mary Kay had the right to unilaterally change the program to, you know, do whatever they wish, including just to terminate it, what they ended up doing was they unilaterally changed the program. They made it where they couldn't remove the program anymore. They specifically called it now non-qualified deferred comp, and they put in all the requirements 409 Cap A. Now, the problem we have here was not that the taxpayer in Peterson did not report the income. She did, but she didn't treat it as subject to self-employment tax. In this case, we had an issue where the court said, well, you know what? We realize you have this prior agreement, but this now said it was non-qualified deferred comp, and we believe you're bound to that label. Or at least two of the three judges on the panel believed you were bound to that label. As such, they said, this is income related to your compensation earned while you were a Mary Kay consultant related to your trader business. And even though you're not currently doing anything, it still represents self-employment income. Now, this is kind of funny because some of you may remember we had cases that went back a number of years ago, and these go back to the late 90s. That involved various insurance agents, and most specifically State Farm agents, who received payments for renewal premiums after they had ceased to be a State Farm agent. And in those cases, a number of courts, we had a case out of the Federal Circuit of Gump versus United States and Milligan versus United States out of the Ninth Circuit, they had ruled that those payments were not subject to self-employment tax. And the Mary Kay consultant said, well, this is just like the insurance agents. I'm being paid after I stop doing the work. The court, the two of the three judges held that, well, first, it's non-qualified deferred comp, so it's different. Those cases both predated the 409 Cap A rules, and neither program in those cases called itself a deferred comp arrangement, not a non-qualified deferred comp arrangement. But they said the second problem that you have is that we believe you're fundamentally different, even if that problem wasn't there. Because they said in the State Farm cases, in essence, you were being paid on renewal premiums. You only got paid if the other party renewed, and you really didn't have any influence over that renewal. The court said in this case, you earned certain rights while you were in business that bound Mary Kay to pay you in the future. It wasn't contingent on your customers going out and buying more cosmetics, but rather it was simply based upon the fact that you'd already put that in order. And secondly, they said that makes it very different. Also, some of this is being paid for your referral network that you picked up. And again, that wasn't your work, they said, but rather was, you know, that was your work assembling that group. Now, there was a dissenting judge who, A, objected to the fact that trying to bind the taxpayer to a unilateral change by Mary Kay that labeled it deferred comp that they had never agreed to. They had agreed to that Mary Kay could change it. They had not agreed to the calling it of deferred comp. And secondly, decided that only part of the program should qualify under the test that was discussed in the State Farm and the insurance agent cases, saying only part of these payments qualify under that test and the other should not. But the interesting aside was everybody agreed that this case was not 100% the same as what happened with the insurance agents. Again, this is an affirmation of a tax court holding which said that they were subject to self-employment tax. Be careful, again, if you try to read the insurance agent cases, be very careful because this suggests that those may be very narrow cases if you have other independent contractor situations with payments that are made after the person leaves their work with the organization, because it appears the courts are willing, even the dissenting opinion, was not willing to say that the insurance cases meant that after you stopped working, you couldn't have self-employment tax. All three judges agreed to that. They just disagreed about whether or not, you know, and to what extent what they received under these programs would have qualified for taxation, but all of them believed at least some of these payments qualified for self-employment tax inclusion. So that creates a little problem for you. Be sure you keep your eye on this stuff. And hey, all these neat things. Now, a couple things to remind you before we leave. First, wanted to remind those of you that my partner, Mark Patrick, is going to be presenting in the San Diego CE Week that Cal CPA puts on. He's going to have two sessions there, one on July 13th and one on July 14th. I'm in lecturing in Phoenix those days. Mark's going to be off there in San Diego. It'll be much nicer and much cooler in San Diego, I'll phrase it at that point, for that day. Preparing Complex 1040s will be his course on July 13th. That course looks at some of the more complicated issues that arise for individual taxpayers, things like the passive activity rules. He'll talk some about the net investment income tax, which I'll be talking about in much more detail in Phoenix that day. And we'll also talk to you about things like net operating losses and all those neat little things that drive you batty on a Form 1040. That's, again, for the CE Week in San Diego. Also, partnership and LLC taxation, complex issues. Mark will cover partnerships in detail. It'll be very similar on the partnership side to what I'll be covering in Tucson, but he'll cover partnerships in more depth there on July 14th. That's all part of the CE Week in San Diego this year that Cal CPA puts on. They have their vacation clusters with multiple courses offered every day. So those of you in California who are looking to sign up for that, I'm just going to suggest there's a couple of choices. And, you know, if you're sitting somewhere like in Blythe, by the way, it's much cooler in San Diego than Blythe, too, just like Phoenix. So you might want to make your way down there to where it'd be nice by the ocean and, you know, take your time and relax. Some courses I have coming up. I also have courses coming up in July, this time in the Garden State of New Jersey. A couple of big things coming up there. I'll be in Rosen, New Jersey on July 20th and 21st. I'll be talking to CPAs about succession planning on July the 20th. That's one of those things we hate to talk about, but we need to talk about because we have to talk about what's going to happen in the future and how we're going to handle it. I'll also be doing an advanced tax update on July 21st. That course takes a look at many of the topics we talk about here, but I'm going to be looking at it from a more advanced standpoint. So we're going to take a much heavier look at fiduciaries and we're going to spend a lot more time on the partnership audit rules. We're going to take a lot more look at exam issues. And that's the sort of thing that will handle somebody, a CPA with multiple years of experience, those who are in senior positions. This is the type of course we arrange for that. We're going to have an update, but gear the update toward those issues that are of interest to those who are more senior. So if you have a chance, be sure to get there. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments here for the week of May the 31st. Current Federal Tax Developments, as always, is brought to you by your State Society of CPAs and Nichols Patrick CPE. I'm Ed Zollers giving you this back, giving you the information here. Some other things that we do have coming up to let you know. couple things you should know of actually not coming up, but things that are important. First thing is you can catch our daily updates on our website at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. That website would also allow you to sign up for email updates where you can find out information about what's going on every day. We post new materials. You'll get an email the next morning. We do not sell this list. We don't do other things with it. You're just going to use it to get your updates. Don't worry about that. Be sure to check your State Society of CPAs for all the wonderful continuing education courses they offer, not just from our organization. We'd love for you to sign up for our organization, no question, but they've got a bunch of other very useful courses coming up from many highly respected and well-qualified instructors. And also take a look for other issues, you know, going forward. Your tax, you know, CPE time's here. And for some of you have June 30 renewal dates, because I just came back from Portland. Oregon is June 30, so people be scrambling there. If you've got a June 30 date, you're looking quickly. Be sure to take a look. Always consider those full-day courses. We're able to deal with topics in much more depth, much more detail than is really available elsewhere. And be sure to tune in next week. We're going to have more information that relates to current federal tax developments now that everybody's back in town following the holiday weekend. Thank you for listening this week.